Welcome, folks, to Take the Points College Football Podcast, week 8, I think. I can never remember what week we're in. We're going to say 8. Do either of you guys have any football things to talk about? You are too big of cowards to discuss the Dave Matthews Band on this podcast and their eternal greatness and their first ballot Rock and Roll Hall of Fame status. So I guess we'll just talk about football.
I swear, like, the cosmic world, whatever's screwed up. Because as soon as you said Dave Matthews, like, there's a Thursday night NFL game going on, and Patrick Mahomes just went down with a knee injury. As soon as you start talking about Dave Matthews, I blame not you. I blame Dave Matthews. So, no, I'll talk about football. Let's see what happened last week. Well, LSU only faced third down 4 times against Florida, so good job in picking LSU to beat Florida. It looked a little sketchy there for a minute, but they ultimately were pretty good. Nice job by that guy calling in the fake bomb threat to try to get the game canceled so his friend wouldn't lose the bet. I feel like I should have done that at least once or twice to help you guys out. I feel bad.
I don't live down in Alabama, but if I were on the jury, no chance I would convict that guy. He did what he had to do, Dan.
He did. It's really honorable. So good job by him. Let's see, what else happened in college football last week? Not too much. What else?
Well, there's a lot we'll get to, including Herm Edwards being the class of the Pac-12. That's one I really want to hear from you guys about because, you know, obviously Pac-12 football is after my bedtime. But it's, it's not often our game of the week is a Pac-12 game, I'm going to say.
Pretty excited about it. But, well, there is one thing we forgot to talk about, and that'd be Georgia losing at home to South Carolina. I mean, wow, that was really bad. Fromm played terrible. The play calling was terrible. Blankenship missed a field goal. Kirby Smart looked out-coached. It looked like Mark Richt all over again. I mean, that's exactly what it looked like. I don't want to sugarcoat it, but that it looked like a classic Richt game. I follow someone, I forget who, on Twitter, a college football person. As soon as they lost, had a great tweet, and it said, once again, Mark Richt loses with premium talent on the field. And I was like, nailed it. Really bad by Georgia. You know, luckily for them, their fate is still in their hands. They run the table. They win the national title. So, not is all lost for Georgia. But what the fuck was that? Really embarrassing.
I will tell you what it is. I texted you guys during the game that I'm like, Will Muschamp's wearing these glasses to look smart. And then I saw, again, on Twitter, someone else afterwards was like, yeah, Will Muschamp now 2-0 since he started wearing glasses. I believe that the glasses are like Samson's hair, and his strength comes from them. This might be a new, smarter, wiser, better Will Muschamp. We might have to watch out.
He's trying to shed that hick label that we put on him, and he's trying to look smart.
He does have those hickish glasses, though. Like, those are the, like...
He got them at Walgreens.
I teach community college in, like, South Carolina, like, rural South Carolina. Like, he's got these little glasses, like, anyway.
Yeah, he definitely bought those at the store.
Those are trash.
He's down at the Low Country CC teaching welding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those aren't prescription. Those are, like, those magnifying ones you can buy at the CVS or the Walgreens for, like, $3 a pair. He's got, like, 9 of them because he sits on them all the time.
Yeah, I think he just like went as a nerd for Halloween last year, and he's like, oh, I found those glasses I wore last year. Let me try them on for this big game. But on a serious note, or you know, as serious as we get, like he legitimately outcoached Kirby Smart. Jake Fromm looked awful, and like that wasn't an upset. I mean, it was an upset in the fact that they're an unranked team, but like. They were absolutely unequivocally the better team that day. And they didn't get the bounces or anything like that. They were the better team and doesn't look good for Georgia if they can lose that game and LSU's looking great. Like obviously the winner of the SEC is going to get into the playoffs. So Georgia's never out of it until that's decided. But like, they seem like, you know, the third best team in the SEC and even Florida, you talked about LSU, Florida, and I picked LSU, but Florida was impressive. I mean, they've got a spark. So like Georgia better watch out when they've got to play them too.
That'll be a fun game. Georgia, Florida, for sure.
Yeah. One thing that is potentially kind of nice about Georgia losing is that if Georgia makes the SEC title game, which is still likely, and they end up losing to an undefeated Alabama or LSU, at least then Georgia will have two losses and be officially eliminated. And then Alabama or LSU would obviously get in being the conference champ and undefeated. But also the loser of that game with one loss would get in if either Ohio State, Oklahoma, or Clemson loses one game. One of those three has to lose a game. So it's tricky.
Yes.
Yeah.
Totally agree. I think, especially if Alabama LSU's close, let's say that's a one-score game, I don't know how you could drop the losing team out of the top five. So they're going to be right in the mix.
Definitely.
They can't put, you know, an undefeated Oklahoma team out of the playoff over one loss Alabama. If that game's 45-44, it's just crazy. So looking for one loss from those other teams. Hopefully Ohio State stumbles, but we'll see.
Yeah, we'll talk about all of them later, but schedules will play a big factor. Let's get into the lines. Why wait? Yeah, let's do some lines, folks.
Why wait when Thursday night, game of the week, Pittsburgh Panthers at Syracuse Orange. Pitt laying 3.5. Woof. Oof. Vegas does not like the Syracuse team. Total of 52, also very low. Go ahead, guys. It's your home team.
I'll go first. I would like the Heisman this year to go retroactively to Eric Dungy because apparently he was the best player in all of college football last year. Tommy DeVito at the helm. He's supposed to be a good recruit. They look absolutely terrible. Being an underdog by 3.5 to this surprisingly mediocre Pitt team at home at the Dome. I mean, come on. Like, this is, I'm not going to call this rock bottom because we've seen some other rock bottoms this year, which we will probably get to shortly. But this is not a high point. A season that Cuse fans will soon forget.
Yeah, there's a lot of basketball articles in the Syracuse.com these days. So not really a lot of football coverage. So this is a tough spot. The half point is a tricky one. Pitt loves playing three-point games. For that, I'm going to take the home dog. Give me the 3.5. I love the extra half point.
I never made a pick officially, but I can't do it. I can't take the Cuse.
I'm not going to bet this game. Yeah, very disappointed in Syracuse this year as well. Moving on, Ohio State travels to Northwestern also on Thursday night. Ohio State laying 28. Last year, Ohio State had a big road game against Purdue. We picked Purdue to win outright. Is this a similar situation? No. Northwestern, very good story, but they are not good at football this year. Ohio State should roll early and often. I think they cover the 28, actually.
Yeah, it makes it a little, the Friday night makes it a little tricky. Definitely Northwestern is a team that I've always liked, but in this spot, this is a tough spot here. I think Ohio State probably covers this.
Allow me to present the opposite viewpoint. Obviously, Ohio State's a much better team than Northwestern. Northwestern not great this year. Next week is Wisconsin at Ohio State, so that's arguably their biggest game of the year. So this is a prime look-ahead spot. And as you said, a Friday night is that's a night when teams traditionally don't turn out their best efforts. So I'm not looking for a top-notch effort from Ohio State out of this game. I think they won't cover, but I'm not willing to bet Northwestern. And they won't cover because of, like, lack of effort on their side, not because of Northwestern being great or anything like that.
Hope they lose.
35-10.
We are moving on to Saturday. Saturday is a pretty nice slate, actually. It's really spread out throughout the day, which I kind of like. The early games are much better than normal. right off the bat, just quickly, Auburn minus 19.5 at Arkansas. Any chance Arkansas pulls an upset here?
No.
You wouldn't think so on paper, but this to me, there's a couple games that I can't justify it with numbers or stats, but just seem fishy to me. This seems like a prime spot for them to pull some shit.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it makes sense. Freshman quarterback on the road against a team that would treat this like their Super Bowl, but Arkansas is just in shambles. I think Ryan's right. I think low score, like 27-0 type game. Well, I could be wrong on that, but yeah, I don't think so. No upset possibility. Same thing here. Clemson minus 24 at Louisville. Similar kind of point spread to the Georgia game. Any chance Clemson falls asleep on the road at Louisville?
In terms of the win or the point spread? I mean, I don't think they'll lose the game, but I think Louisville could certainly cover that 24-point line. This Louisville team's all right.
Quietly, they're 4-2.
Yeah, they're not bad. I actually would lean Louisville with the points, but definitely not the upset win.
I agree. I think I actually kind of like Louisville. I might actually throw a little bit on them plus 24. It's a lot of points for a noon start, too. That's an early start. Total 62, kind of like the over there. I think there's going to be a lot of points scored in this game.
I would like to, before we move on, I just want to go through schedules because that's the most important thing. And we talked about those like top five or six teams. I had picked Clemson to lose a game, but I didn't realize what a cakewalk their schedule was going to be. I mean, this is, you know, maybe their hardest remaining game. Then they got Boston College at home. Wofford somehow, November 2nd, they play Wofford. Then the always tricky at NC State. So we'll watch out for that. And then a decent Wake Forest team at home, and then they got to go to face the new smarter, wiser Muschamp. So it's like there's a couple spots where they could lose, but like they didn't really play a hard game. They don't have what I would call a legitimately hard game. I mean, we thought A&M and Cuse would be their big games, and both of those teams sort of flopped. So it's like they might get into the playoff despite like never really being challenged seriously.
Yeah.
Very possible. All right. Moving on. Here's a weird one. Speaking of Mr. Reading Glasses, Florida minus 5.5 at South Carolina. Noon start, total 47. I don't know what's going on with the health of the South Carolina quarterback whose knee was wrapped. The guy who came in looked and played a lot like Kyler Murray. I don't know if you noticed that. Like, same mannerisms, too. It was crazy. Like, took the snap the same way. This is such a weird game. Florida coming off that LSU loss, another road game. This is a classic spot to mail it in. I have no clue. Stay far, far away from this game. That's my take. You guys go right ahead.
No, I totally agree. This is a complete stay away from me.
I'm glad you brought up the quarterback situation because I would have to see who's actually going to play. But I thought Joyner was better.
Yeah.
Like if he plays this week, I would be more likely to, you know, take South Carolina.
He was exciting and fun and running around and making plays happen. It was good.
I mean, they're not that great of an offense. And so to have the added mobility of that quarterback, like it adds an element that they were missing. And that's the reason I think they actually held off Georgia and pulled that one out, was having his mobility. So if he plays, like I think they could give Florida a run. But again, will the real Will Muschamp please stand up?
Agree. All right, here we go. Game of the week, part two, Houston at UConn.
Houston, oh, yeah.
With no one really playing on their team, with no effort, no one cares, laying 22.5 on the road at UConn. Quick synopsis, take Houston. That's it. Ryan?
Yeah, I don't talk about UConn games.
Doesn't talk about UConn games. I like to offer it to him every week just out of you know, I'm a polite guy. Tom?
As we know, we did the UConn Supercut at the end of last season where we had every single time we talked about UConn, and it was a nice journey through the horrifically bad 1-11 season. But the best part of it is it was only 25 minutes long, I think, and Ryan did not appear in the first like 19 minutes. And like, if that was the only episode you listened to or the first one, you would just think there were two hosts of the show. And then all of a sudden there's this third voice and it's like, wait, who's that guy?
He's like, yeah, UConn sucks in the background.
And then yeah. And then you did say something like, I'm not talking anymore about UConn or something like that. So you've held up to your word. Anyway, I happened to check out covers.com earlier and, they have their like, you know, five, most played bets. And of course, Houston, I think is like number two on that list. Of course. I'm going to make a prediction. This is, the local NBC Connecticut station report from Saturday night after the game. Turns out that Houston, actually every single player on their team decided to go into the transfer portal. And so instead of fielding a team, Houston played with UConn's backups and they still covered the 22 against UConn starters.
Most likely.
I like it.
Okay. We're in unison. Let's see, some other noon gems. West Virginia travels to Oklahoma. Oklahoma laying 33, total of 63. Is that too many points?
Yes, for me it is. I don't know what will happen. This West Virginia team's okay, they're passable. They've got a little bit of talent. I don't know, I couldn't lay that many this late in the season.
I think it's too many points. I think you're right. I think Oklahoma's defense will give up some softy points. I kind of like West Virginia in the 33. If you know, it's so sick because you know you have no chance of winning.
Lincoln Riley hates everyone. He's putting up 70. This is just the way I'm going to bet every week.
Okay. Well, thank you, Ryan. That's a fair point. See, now this is here's one I like. Wisconsin minus 31.5 at Illinois. Ryan, how many points is Illinois going to score this week?
Zero.
That's looking likely. Give me Wisconsin, especially Wisconsin first half. I feel a 28-0 first half coming on here.
That's great. I love that.
Yeah, first half. I mean, once again, they've got Ohio State, so the quicker they can run up the score and get the starters out and get out of this game, the better. I would normally call it a look ahead, but again, like Illinois is going to score 3 points. See, now we're going to get sued. Sorry. Now we're getting sued. You gotta talk over those songs. Otherwise it's considered like non-fair use, you know?
Fair enough. Okay. Sorry to interrupt you, Tom, but I have to chime in here. We are not doing a tarmac report this week.
Oh, no.
Despite the talk of Lovie Smith, we're going to go the other way. We're at the midway point of the college season. It's week 8, and we're going to keep it great in week 8. We're going to do our annual list of the 8 most underappreciated coaches in college football. All right, so we're going to keep things positive. We're going to start off at number 8 as a favor to you, Tom, at 6-0, Penn State Nittany Lion coach James Franklin. Despite their number 7 ranking and what they've done, still underrated, underappreciated for what he did coming off the sanctions, building a really, really tremendous culture. I love what he was doing this week, wearing the dreadlock wig. And doing the selfies, that was freaking awesome. Quick question, Tom. How many total points has Penn State allowed on the year through 6 games?
Oh, let's see. It was 40 through 4. And then they played Purdue and allowed 7. And then they allowed 12 for Iowa. So I'm going to say 59.
I have 19. In conference, they've allowed 19 points. Sorry, in conference.
In conference, yeah. But that's only 3 games, and they blanked Maryland. And so it was 12 against Iowa and 7 against Purdue.
Yeah,
the high scorer
is pretty good.
Yeah, the high-scoring teams on Penn State, it's actually the Buffalo Bulls.
That's right. That's right. So coming in at number seven, the number one on the list last year at the end of the season and the winner of the Eddie Robinson Coach of the Year Award. 5-1 this year, Bill Clark at UAB, just taking care of business, leading his division, their side of the bracket right now, on his way to another bowl game, and just a tremendous, tremendous job. He deserves a big-time job, even though I hope he doesn't leave UAB. Number six, Tom, another personal favorite of yours. You've worn me down over the last two seasons. At 5-1, Dave Clawson, Wake Forest.
That's right.
6 years in, they're not a traditional program. And also just, you know, the circumstances in which he took over the program, you know, it's kind of a tragic thing. And then he steps in and just does a great job of getting the team, building a culture, building an identity. And good for him. Dave Clawson's 5-1 on the year. They are on their way to bowl eligibility.
With the return of the MAC in North Carolina, the triangle is now complete, and we've got good coaches throughout the research triangle.
That is true. That is it's good football down there, finally. They don't have to worry about just basketball only. All right, coming in number five, at 5-1, Willie Fritz, Tulane University. Mm-hmm. In his fourth season, this guy just wins everywhere he goes. Everywhere he's coached before this, he's just been an absolute winner. A couple of years ago, I remember like 7-8 years ago, he was at Sam Houston State when they won the national title in like 2011. And he just kept, you know, moving up from there. They had Tulane last season, had only their sixth winning season in 137-year history of the program. Sixth winning season, fifth bowl appearance ever. And they are 5-1. They're well on their way to another one. And let's not understate Tulane being in New Orleans, how extra, extra impressive that is, that he can do what he's doing down there with so many distractions. Coming at number four, the reason we started this report, Jim Leonard, Wisconsin. Man, that guy's awesome. I'm biased. He's a former Buffalo Bill fan favorite, but that guy's just all business, doing great things in Wisconsin. People still aren't talking about them. My wallet's going to be talking about them against Ohio State next week. That's a guarantee, and a foreshadow for next week's episode. So great job, Jim. 6-0.
Love it. I love the fact you're including coordinators in this.
He's the head coach. Everyone knows it. I'm not giving anyone else credit but Jim Leonard. He's a Bill. All right. Number three, speaking of coordinators, Brian Harsin, Boise State University, former coordinator, worked his way up. In his time as the head coach, he has gone through 20 different position coaches and still maintained this high level of excellence at Boise State, kept that tradition going, doing it with no-name, low-level recruits and just continuing to develop talent even though he's turning over coaches. Speaking of that, honorable mention, special honorable mention to former offensive coordinator at Boise, now the head coach at App State. They're also 5-0 on the season so far, so a little shout-out there.
Mm-hmm. And ranked now.
And ranked, that's right. Number two, Matt Rhule. I mean, yep. Even though we will always ride or die for Art Briles, we will always support Art Briles.
Define we.
Dan and I on the West Coast will always support Art Briles. With all the sanctions and all the bullshit that the NCAA brought onto Baylor, Rhule 6-0 on the year, just doing a great, great job. They extended him, by the way, after week four, when they started 4-0, they extended him through 2027.
Yep.
So really exciting things for Baylor. Hope that they come back. It's always fun rooting for Baylor. They're just fun. And then number one, we spoke about him earlier. It's kind of a little bit of a letdown that they're 1-4 this year. But I just cannot go without putting him at number one. Pat Fitzgerald at Northwestern. That guy is just criminally underrated. They finally got the new facility, so I think that they're going to be able to take another leap forward. He's been offered jobs, bigger jobs, NFL jobs. That dude bleeds purple. And then a special shout-out was just announced today, I believe, or yesterday. Northwestern was the first Power 5 team in the major sports to have a 100% graduation rate. So, me being the former coach, speaker, let's say, on this podcast, let's give a great shout out to a guy who not only has won games most of the time this year, notwithstanding, but he's graduating his players at a historic rate that's never been done before. So huge shout out to Pat Fitzgerald. Let's hope these new facilities on Lake Michigan take you guys to another higher level. And that's it for this week. I just wanted to keep things positive and give some shout outs to some underappreciated coaches.
I like it. Thank you for doing that. And I'm glad you brought up Matt Rhule, because I wanted him to come up this week somehow in the show, because as we talk about schedules and all that, like, Baylor's the best team left on Oklahoma's schedule. I mean, they're the toughest challenge, the third toughest challenge in that conference. If you take away Oklahoma and Texas, I think they're the best team remaining.
Yeah, he's doing a great job, and I'm kind of excited to get to bet Baylor Bears again.
All right, let's keep it rolling.
All right, I'm not too happy with that last segment. I kind of miss the pain of the Tarmac Report. I'm going to be longing for next week's episode.
Oh, there's some frauds out there. They're going to call it out soon.
Well, I have a feeling a coaching discussion that is not so positive is about to come up in the very, very near future.
Yes. Very soon, Tom. But right now, we're going to go with LSU traveling to Mississippi State. LSU minus 18, total of 62. Mississippi State looked pretty terrible last week against Tennessee. Now they're getting only 18 against LSU. Is that enough points, Ryan?
This is the shady line of the week for me. This is like so hard to figure out. Mississippi State coming off an atrocious loss. LSU coming off a really, really emotional win and then traveling on the road. This is such a letdown trap spot, but despite that, how bad Mississippi State looked against that awful Jeremy Pruitt coach trash, I just can't do it. I'm going to take LSU.
My feelings are 100% exactly the same as what you just said.
I like what I just heard. Blowout. Take LSU. Speaking of blowouts, Minnesota on the road, laying 28.5 at Rutgers. Now, I love box scores. I've looked at it my whole life in all sports. Baseball when I was a kid. Hockey. Everything. I saw a box score last week that you just aren't going to see. The quarterback for Rutgers played the whole game. This doesn't include sacks. He threw for 1 yard. A yard. 1 yard. I don't even know how that's possible. I'm going to parlay Houston and Minnesota for sure this week. Just saying. Anybody got something to add to this?
Yeah, I was just pulling up the schedule because you always want to look for the look-ahead game. But the undefeated and very good Golden Gophers are not undefeated. They did lose a game, didn't they? I think they lost the first game.
No, I think it's 6-0.
Are they?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. Yeah, they pulled the first game out barely. And since then, they've been quite good. They beat up on Nebraska, much to all of our surprise. I think we all picked Nebraska last week, and they dominated. They're one of the upper echelon teams in the Big Ten right now, and you got to ride the hot hand. Rutgers, by the way, they should not only fire the coach, they should fire the interim coach, they should fire the SID and the marketing coordinator and literally everyone involved in that program and start from scratch. I don't know why Rutgers can't be better at football. They're in New Jersey. They have athletes. There's 8 million people in New York City. I know it's not traditionally a football powerhouse area, but like Penn State gets a ton of guys from New Jersey. Even if they got the second best recruits there, they still should win a game now and then. Poor job, Rutgers. Come on.
Shadow's coming back. They're going to start chopping wood. Don't you worry.
It's happening.
Yeah, fuck yeah, it is. Brutal. Okay, moving on.
Nice. So, yeah, pack. No look-ahead game for Minnesota, so you're good to bet that one.
Very good. Nice little Pac-12 game here. Oregon at Washington. Oregon -3, total 48.5. Oregon's defense is really, really good. They've done excellent all year. Washington, very Jekyll and Hyde team. I did watch all of their game against Arizona last week. Offense looked really good in the second half, but Arizona's really bad, so kind of tough to say. I kind of like Oregon in this game. I think they finally win on the road at Washington, but, man, that's going to be a tough game to bet.
It would have been a tough game to bet if I didn't watch Eason last week. He was not impressive, like, at all. And like Dan said, Oregon's defense is very impressive. And if they get after him, he's going to have a couple turnovers. I would definitely take Oregon on a first half money line. I think they get after him early and try to get maybe even a defensive score. If you can get that prop, I really do like Oregon on a defensive pick six this week.
I got nothing.
Pac-12 expert Tom Z.
I mean, I have nothing on the Pac-12 in general, but even this game is especially hard.
That's fine. No big deal. All right, well, this is more in your wheelhouse, hopefully. This is your West Coast. Here we go. We got the Baylor Bears at Oklahoma State.
Mm-hmm. No respect for the Bears.
Oklahoma State -4.5, total 68.5. Yowza. Z, what you got?
The undefeated Baylor Bears deserve more respect. This should be a pick 'em game. Take the points.
Okay. I also would probably take the points here, and I would love to hook that with an over. I like the over more than anything else, but if I'm forced to take a pick, I'd probably take the 4.5 points.
Okay. These are two of my favorite teams. This is very tough. When that happens, I cannot pick a side. Normally, I bet an over, but this one's a little strange. I'm actually leaning the under, so probably I'll stay away. Very tough game to bet. I'm kind of being soft this week. I'm going to have to go hard.
Do you guys? I mean, I don't know. You guys are more in this region, but I don't know if you know the numbers. It seems like the the Big 12 doesn't seem to be putting up the point totals that they have been in previous years. I mean, certainly not like 3 years ago when it was like automatic money every single game, but it sure seems like the totals are down and the overs are still pretty high. So I am tempted to lean under in a lot of these games going forward until Vegas catches up. But that's more of a premonition I've had watching a little bit as opposed to like actual figures. So I don't know if you, the Vegas outsider, had anything.
No, I think you're right. I think there was really great quarterback play in that conference for a long time that went under the radar. Just like take a look at the quarterbacks that came out of that conference over the past, 8 years. It's crazy. Right now it's a little bit low. I mean, outside of Oklahoma and Texas, you really don't have a powerhouse, rest offense. West Virginia's down. Oklahoma State has a freshman with a lot of potential, and he's going to be great, but they're not fully kind of in bloom yet. It's going to take a little time. So, yeah, this one's 68.5 is a lot of points. That's 35 each. I mean, again, it's the Big 12. It could be 60-60, but who knows? Now, moving on to a game that's not so high scoring. Game of the week, for real this time, Arizona State at Utah. Utah lane 13, total of 45. Utah looking really good lately. They took care of Oregon State how you're supposed to take care of Oregon State. They smothered them out like 52-0 early and then had like fifth stringers in. So that was impressive on the road. Arizona State won on a last-second 20-yard scramble against Washington State in a thriller, 38-34. That was at home. They had 31 points in the fourth quarter against a terrible Washington State defense. Now they're going on the road to Utah. Utah's red hot. It's really a shame they screwed that USC game up early in the year. I think Utah's going to wax them. That's a freshman quarterback for Arizona State. I think this is the week where they finally kind of get humbled. I think this is Arizona State's one loss they have the whole year that's actually pretty big. Now, at the same time, Herm's not lost by more than a touchdown since he's taken over at Arizona State. So I am fading history, but I think Utah's going to get it done in a big way on Saturday.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's the biggest thing for me is that Arizona State is such a run dominating team right now, and they really don't throw the ball much. They really do rely on the run for everything. So Utah's strength is their front seven. They do have one of the most talented front sevens in the entire college football. Despite that USC loss, which was a bunch of deep chucks, their secondary was exposed a little bit, but this plays right into their strength. I love Utah in this spot, and despite the 45 number, I also like the under. I think this has 31-3 written all over it.
I will not be making a pick. This is your jurisdiction. However, I would like a Herm report since we haven't done an official one this year. Has he been up to anything? Has he been quiet? What's going on? I know he's on HBO this week, but I haven't seen it.
No, I haven't either. Herm's been quiet. Herm's taking care of business. He's got a lot of freshmen, so it's a lot of on-the-field coaching, relying on his special assistant, Marvin Lewis, to help him develop some of these 28 freshmen that are playing for them right now. So not a lot on the Herm front, but hopefully there'll be some good stuff leading up to this game and after this game.
There's some kind of like military parade going on outside your guys' apartment, it sounds like. I hear choppers.
Well, that's just Arizona State's police escort going up to Utah.
All right, what else we got?
All right, we got Georgia bouncing back, laying 26 at home against Kentucky. Is this a auto Georgia bet woodshed, or do you stay away because you're scared? I say auto Georgia bet.
Tom and I are terrified because neither of us will make a pick.
I'm terrified based on what I saw from Fromm last week. I know playing at their potential, they have the possibility to smother Georgia. I guess I would go with my theory. I don't really have a name for this theory, but like when a team loses when they shouldn't, they always come back and they it's like they take it out on, yes. It's almost like a revenge game, but it's revenge against a lesser opponent. Michigan did this earlier this year. Michigan lost Michigan's one loss earlier this season. They had, I think, Rutgers the next game, and they beat them like 60-0. And it was clear of like, oh, we lost to the good team, but now we'll come back and like it assert our dominance on this lesser team to show that we're actually great. And so I feel like we're lining up for one of those. Kentucky's not as bad as Rutgers, obviously, but Georgia's going to be like, hey, we're still good. We're still really good. Check it out. We just beat Kentucky by 100. So
Oklahoma does that after every loss, every year. Every single year, they win by 60.
Yeah, and, Michigan does it. Wisconsin will do it. Like, Big Ten teams love it. They lose to, like, Iowa, or Ohio State loses to Purdue. They come back, they play Illinois, and they beat them by 150 points. And they're like, see, we're awesome. It's like, well, where were you against the good team?
That's right. Okay, here we go. Moving on. Kansas Jayhawks, Les Miles on the road at UT. We got the Horns laying 21, total of 62.5. Tom, what do you got?
Nothing. Is Kansas good still? I've not watched them for a couple weeks.
No, they're horrible.
Nope, they're no good. Hook them.
Yeah, that line's fucking way too low. This is, the best bet of the whole week. Texas minus 21. This is a fun game. They've had a very hard schedule. They played LSU. They played Oklahoma. They've had some ups. They've had some downs. There's a lot of talent on that team. They're very healthy on offense. I kind of like the over. Texas over hook 'em. Like they're going to score like 52, like 52, like 17 type game.
Yeah, Texas is still a New Year's Six team to me. Like they'll still squeeze their way into the Peach Bowl or whatever.
All right, Tom, we got ourselves just a handful of games left. Ooh, we're going to go chronological and stay true to form. The fourth game of the week, Michigan travels to Penn State. Penn State laying 9.5, total of 47. There's only one person I can kick it to here. Go ahead, Tom.
All right. You're going to hear a lot of conjecture this week. Let me pull this up. Stupid phone. All right, here we go. From the Morning Call paper, this is one of the Chicago Tribune, child papers, for which I work for one. So they publish the same articles in like 30 papers around the nation. So you'll see this one get some play as we go over the next couple days. But basically the what they're saying is like it's a whiteout game, okay? And everyone's like, oh, whiteout games, look out. But actually, Penn State is only 5-6 in whiteout games. And so they're like, oh, actually, they lose the whiteout, so they're not good. But I'd like to go through the history briefly. First off, the 05 whiteout game, they're not counting. The one where they beat Ohio State, where they were way overmatched, they don't count that one. In 07, they crushed Notre Dame. In 2010, they beat Michigan. That was the Matt Al Migroin year. One of these was a game against Alabama with Rob Bolden at QB. So, like, you're not going to win that. I guess my point is, like, these were all during the years where Penn State was terrible. So they beat Ohio State a couple years ago. They routed Michigan 2 years ago. Like, they play better than they should under a whiteout game, regardless of record. This is a whiteout game. People are going to be fired up. Penn State and Michigan have alternated the last 3 years, blowing each other out. Michigan blew them out last year and 3 years ago. Penn State blew them out 2 years ago. There is absolutely no love lost whatsoever. If Penn State's offense can get clicking, James Franklin will not hesitate to score up until 0-0s on the clock. Even if they're up like 50, he'll keep scoring. So if you like Penn State, like, they're not going to relent at all. I think the problem with that is their offense. Now, I would like to take some credit for all of us, because I listen to dudes like, you know, Colin Coward, and they make these stupid predictions, and an hour later, like, they're proven false, and they're just like, oh, well, on to the next bad prediction. We call things like months and sometimes years in advance, and like, we're always right on the big predictions. Like, Dan, 2 years ago, you said that Tua was going to win the Heisman this year. He hadn't played a game. You're just like, oh, this backup for Alabama is really good and is going to win a Heisman. Now Alabama's number one in the country 2 years later. So why I bring that up is because, you know, the second or third week of the season or whatever it was, Penn State was beating people like 50-0. And I told everybody that Penn State's offense is getting all the hype, but they're going to struggle. They're actually not that good. And when they play good defenses, they're going to struggle. But Penn State's defense is what makes them a top 10 team in the country. And they've got a top 5, if not top 3 defense in the entire country. Michigan, despite their flaws, also has a great defense. The spread is 9 in this game. I don't think either team's going to score more than like 16. So it's a pretty good bet to take the points, I think. I actually, as much as I hate to say it, like, I think the Michigan plus 9 is a great bet. Okay. I think Penn State gets it done at home with the whiteout, but you're talking like 12-10 or something like that. Like, it's going to be ugly.
20-6.
This is going to be one of those games where all the SEC fans who talk about how much the Big Ten sucks, they're all going to point to this game and be like, see, this is horrible.
Okay, then I'll take the under just because you said so. Under 47.
Absolutely.
All right, that sounds good. Consensus? Okay. Well, Tom, this is the definition of a Shang Tsung game I'd like to talk about right now. Tennessee, fresh off their big win, travels to Alabama. The old 9:01 p.m. start for Alabama. They do this once a year where it's just way a late game and someone gets murdered. Usually it's Ole Miss. This year it's Tennessee. I like Alabama minus 35. I think they're going to win by 49 points. That's my guess.
55-0, Roll Tide.
59-0, Roll Tide.
Okay, good job. All right, we're in consensus here.
I mean, before we can't move on, like, Ryan, do you want to say any words? Like, yeah, I know. Okay. I know we sometimes don't like to do eulogies, but, you know, as the great Kanye West once said, like, if you love someone, you should tell them. People don't get the flowers while they can still smell them. Do you have any words to say for Jeremy Pruitt before he's left on a tarmac somewhere?
Yes. Send his wife some flowers. It's going to take him a little longer to get home. He's flying home coach, economy seat, middle seat.
Boarding class C, Southwest getaway fare.
Oh, he's not flying Southwest. No way. He's flying like, was it Budget Airlines? That's all he's getting. He's getting Budget Airlines on a rickety plane, prop plane, back to freaking Knoxville, get the realtor on the line. Oh, boy.
Meet up at the Cracker Barrel.
Do we got to pull the kids out of school? Are they going to finish the year? Oh, shit. We got to have a conversation, honey.
Does ValueJet still exist?
I don't know. Spirit Airlines. I think that's what he's taking. Is Spirit exist in the South? I don't know. The South has their own airlines.
Yes. Spirit's around.
All right. That's what he's flying.
Okay, there are two games left. We'll finish where we should, but real quick, a non-important game I'd like to talk about briefly, Nevada at Utah State. Nevada getting 21, total 59. A couple things. Last week, Nevada played our boy Jay Love in San Jose State. Nevada couldn't score any points against Hawaii, who has no defense whatsoever. They scored 3 points at home. They have two quarterbacks. Neither of them are good. Both have been hurt. They don't play good. Whatever. This is why we bet Jay Love last week. It was 21-0 Nevada right out the bat, like with passing touchdowns. I'm going, what the hell is going on? Well, apparently Nevada is starting a new quarterback. You might remember him from Last Chance U on Netflix. He was the number two quarterback in the country coming out, allegedly. Signed with Florida State. Kicked out of school at Florida State. Went to JUCO, which is a normal route, except he got kicked out of JUCO. And now is apparently in Reno playing for Nevada. Anyway, he threw for 355 last week. Utah State just played LSU last week, which is a very physical game. Give me the 21 with Nevada. I think there's some backdoor potential even late if need be. But three touchdowns and a quarterback who's hungry, I'll take it. I like Nevada as a sneaky late night pick.
I like that one a lot. Good tip.
Thank you. And we'll finish where we should. God damn it. Air Force minus 3 at Hawaii. The Hawaii test is back. Tom, it starts at 11:01. How many minutes are you going to watch?
11:01, well, if it goes to overtime, I'm trying to figure out potentially, you know, my daughter was up at 5 a.m. this morning, so there is a real chance I could catch the tail end of this one. Obviously, I will not watch any of the start.
It's true. You should really start watching English Premier League soccer with us because it's on so early in the morning, well, especially here on the West Coast. I mean, there's games on at 4:30, 5 a.m. But honestly, like every weekend, like me and Ryan are normally watching soccer at 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning. And it's like a huge game, and that leads into college football. So like this Saturday, for instance, you could do a Manchester City moneyline parlay and throw it in with the noon game because they're playing again, you know, at the same time. Anyway. it'd be good for your schedule because there's soccer on all the time.
I mean, I really like West Coast football schedule. I like the idea that the Doris Burke Illinois versus Northwestern game starts at like 8:45 a.m. You wake up, you can watch a little of that, and then you get tuned up, and the games that would be 3:30 here, like your CBS game of the week, start at like 12:30.
Yep.
And yet, you know, with Hawaii and some of those West Coast games going so late, you still get football like well into the night. So it's much better. And the Sunday, I mean, there's no comparison. Like 1 o'clock is the worst time for an NFL football game because it's like you literally can't do anything else all day if you want to watch it.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I like getting the Bills game on at 10 a.m., that thing's over by 1, and then I have a whole day to do whatever I want because I'm not watching the late NFC trash.
Right, yeah. I mean, you have a vastly superior setup in many ways, but especially there. West Coast is the future of the world and America. You guys chose why. You invested, I'm not going to say low, but, you know, you definitely bought a rising stock there.
Early start time for sports. It's the greatest thing ever. Like, even right now with, like, you know, like the Yankees-Houston game, it's an 8 o'clock start on a weekday for East Coast people, and those games are 4 hours. They go after midnight. Like, here they end at 9 if they go late.
If I ever struck it really rich and didn't have to work, you would definitely see me, like, buying a mansion in La Jolla or whatever so I can get out to the West Coast. I would have to be rich enough where I could, like, pipe in my own water from Canada, you know? For the impending drought, but other than that, it's a great deal.
I agree.
Despite being in a desert, Tom, in the 7 years that Dan and I have both lived in Arizona, we have never been put on a water conservation plan and never had a drought warning living in Phoenix. California, they got their own issues. But here in Arizona, don't believe the desert lies. It's beautiful. And there's never been I've never had to go on water conservation in 7 years living here. So plenty of water here. Don't worry about it. You're more than welcome out here.
All right. I don't want to end the show without talking about Boise State. They go to BYU. Mm-hmm. We talked about Boise last week. You guys were brainwashed by the Hawaii Rainbow Warriors, and Boise State ended up covering easily.
Yes.
I think they're going to do it again against a BYU team that's really struggled this year with a newish quarterback. You know, much respect to that guy for being the first African-American quarterback. But, you know, their team as a whole is struggling a lot. And I think Boise is favored by less than a touchdown. I know it's on the road and BYU is a tough place to play, but I feel like this shapes up very well for them. I really like Bachmeier. Hartson's been a great coach, and I wouldn't say they were ever like down, but they definitely had a dip from their like true glory days, and he's getting them, you know, back a little bit more on the rise, not quite to the like Statue of Liberty type, heights, but like Boise State's a legitimately good powerhouse team again, and BYU's struggling. So I like that one a lot.
And Hank's going to be the starter for the next 4 years. So, you know,
They
do have the opportunity here if they keep surrounding him with the right pieces that they could recapture that, you know, potentially even a top 10 ranking in the next 2 to 3 seasons because Hank is really, really good, dude. Bachmeier is really excellent.
I mean, they can get it this year. Like they could legitimately, I think they have a very, very good shot at being a New Year's Six team.
They're going to be the new UCF now for the next couple of years.
Yep.
Yeah. Boise State.
They're back, baby. So is Baylor. Yeah.
It's like we're basically just back in 2013.
I love it. RG3 for Heisman.
RG4. There'll be an RG4 sometime soon. Just give him another like 8 years.
RG3 Baylor was like the fucking best ever. It really was. I'm just going to go on record and say... like, those games were epic. It was so good. Baylor defense didn't even try. They're like, sorry, we gave up 14. We're only 3 minutes into the game. Like, all right, no big deal.
Who do you guys think are the, like...
they're so good.
Like, think about NFL fans, like NFL first fans, and, like, who are the guys or the teams that, like, they just will never understand? Like, RG3, certainly. I think, like, those Texas Tech teams of, like, 4 or 5 years ago. But like they know about Tebow, I'm saying, even though he wasn't great, everybody understands that he was a great Florida player. But who were they?
No one understood how fucking good like that Kellen Moore team was with, you know, Austin Pettis and Titus Young, and they were loaded. Like that offense scored whenever they wanted against everyone. I'll never forget they started the year against Virginia Tech, and Virginia Tech was favored by 3 points. And I was like, this is a travesty. And they said, well, it's at the Redskins Stadium, you know, in Washington, D.C. It's like a home game, Boise across the country, primetime game, Labor Day weekend. I'm like, don't care, don't care, don't care, don't care. And that was against, like, good Vatech that was, like, ranked in the top 10. And they didn't give a shit, and they still dropped over 30 on them and beat them. And everyone should have taken notice when that happened. Like, and that was, like, late in the Boise State kind of, like, run. And still people didn't care, but...
Yeah, they beat they beat Oregon. I believe they beat Georgia.
They were so good. And they sent players to the NFL, and that's what people never gave them credit for. And they gave, like, skill position player, too. Like, not just, like, man, they had this really good left guard that was good at pulling. Like, no. Like... Their quarterback now is the offensive coordinator for the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, you know, I'm not saying that's, like, amazing, but in the grand scheme of the sport of football, to be the offensive coordinator of the Dallas Cowboys is probably a luxury job. So, I mean, that just tells you how talented that team was. But anyway, I always get heated on this. That Boise team was ridiculously good, extremely well coached, super smart, never turned the ball over. Just, I mean, they were one of the most fun teams to bet on you could ever ask for.
I feel so bad for anyone who never saw the Fiesta Bowl, the 07 Fiesta Bowl, and didn't, like, witness it in all their glory. Like, there's no NFL game ever that's been as good as that. I mean, they talk about, like, the helmet catch or whatever, or some of those, like, close Super Bowls, and it's like, I don't think any of them held a candle to the three trick plays at the end of the game, a hook and ladder, a Statue of Liberty. People forget about the running back pass to score the touchdown that led to that. And then the guy proposed to his girlfriend. It's like easily the greatest moment I've ever seen, but like no NFL game will ever come close to that.
Totally agree.
Yeah. Also, you know, Oregon, I know it sounds crazy with like Chip Kelly, like when they went to the national title game and lost to that physical Auburn team. I mean, that's pretty impressive to make it all the way there. I mean, they had like a lead or they were close or tied in the fourth quarter. I mean, for a Pac-12 team who was undersized to make it that far was really impressive. And again, they were just so fun to watch in the Pac-12. I mean, they were like, it was like them against like any team. You're like, oh my God, there's the 73-yard touchdown on a wheel route pass. I mean, playing those NCAA video games, everyone played with Oregon because the playbook was so good. Hell, even when you played with someone else, you played with Oregon's playbook. So, again, from being on the West Coast, they didn't get the pub that they deserve, but those Oregon teams were really, really, really good. I mean, if you put any of those teams in the Pac-12 this year, easily undefeated or going to the run of the table. So, I think that Oregon team also way underrated.
Yeah, I think going back a little, like witnessing Michael Vick and Reggie Bush in college and Vince Young, like guys who didn't necessarily, like they had okay careers, but definitely any NFL first fan like wouldn't understand why those guys are like, you know, demigods in college.
Yeah, for sure.
Ryan, you got anything?
No, I mean, I kind of got into the Boise stuff earlier in the episode, but just super impressed with what they're doing. I love what Dan was saying about Kellen Moore being the offensive coordinator for the Cowboys. That's crazy to me. But even crazier that Dan and I were talking about was the Cowboys lost to the Saints last week. And they asked the Saints defense, like, how you guys were so good. It seemed like you guys knew what the Cowboys were running. And they're like, well, what we did is we went back and watched game tape of Kellen Moore at Boise to see what hand signals he used to use on the field when he was calling audibles. And then we noticed that he's still using the same hand signals to call the same audibles on the Cowboys. They're like, so that was kind of really cool and kind of funny. Like, that they went all the way back to Boise because they really don't have any NFL game tape on him. So they went to his college game tape and they're like, he was a coach on the field there and he's a coach here. Like, so like kind of what Dan was saying there, those teams were so smart that he literally was a coach on the field and he's using those exact same hand signals to call the same freaking plays in the NFL. So it wasn't just a bunch of gimmicks. We remember the hook and ladder. We remember the Statue of Liberty because they were exciting. But those were few and far between. Those were necessary things to do in weird spots. Besides that, they were a great offense, an innovative offense. They didn't weren't all just gadgets only. And I think Kellen Moore's showing that with the Cowboys now that you know they're not just smoke and mirrors. That you know he is a really really brilliant football mind.
Yeah, and I mean the gadget plays were mostly in the OO's decade, you know, whatever the aughts, whatever you call it, like when they didn't have quite the talent. Like by the time they got to like 2011, you know, the year they played TCU in the Fiesta Bowl, like they hardly ran any gadget plays by that point. The more talent they got in, the more they just ran as almost a traditional college football offense. They matched up with anyone and just pushed them around.
Yeah, it's just a shame that's what people kind of free associate with the with Boise program is they're like, oh, yeah, the underdogs that run all the trick plays. Like, no, no, they're a great football program that wins games their way, and then they don't run all just trick plays only.
And the other thing about Boise, I guess we're just praising Boise for like 20 minutes, but if you look it up, like they have been better for a lot longer, or they got better a lot earlier than I remember. Like I think of the Fiesta Bowl as sort of their rise, but they were pretty good even back in like 04, 03. I mean, they're going on 15 years of excellence.
Absolutely. So good for them. It's awesome.
Yeah. So I like Boise this week. Now watch them lose to BYU.
Take the point. Take
the point. Take the point.
Yeah. All right.
I like BYU the points.
All right, anything else to add?
No, sir.
Nah, good stuff.
All right, see you all next week. Thank you for listening. Good night.